Hebrews 10 verses 24 and 25. And let us consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together. You'll remember on the harvest Sunday morning that when I came in, there was a little dog sitting up here on the pulpit as part of the harvest decorations. I told you a little story that morning about a dog. It belonged to a lady in a far-off land. She was a Christian and her husband was a heathen and had no love for the things of God. But when she went to church every Sunday, the dog went with her. And then after she died, and she died because of a brutal beating that her husband gave her one evening, when she died, the little dog continued to go to church. Such was the example and the habit that it had formed. Every Sunday and every Wednesday, the dog would leave the house, and the man would wonder where the dog went, and the curiosity got the better of him. And he followed the dog and found that it was still going to the meetings, still going to the house of God. And it went in and sat beside the exact same seat where his wife had sat for all of those years. And what would happen whenever the appeal was made, and remember that in many of the American churches, and that influence takes place abroad too, wherever the American missionaries have been, when an appeal is made, the appeal is even made to God's people. If there's a message brought on Bible reading, you're urged to come forward and to consecrate your heart to the Lord, that you're going to seek to read the Bible more and so forth. Well, whenever the appeal was made, she would sometimes go forward and kneel down, and the little dog would come forward and kneel down beside her. And that's what the dog did this Sunday morning. The man followed the dog to church, and the appeal was made, and the dog went forward along with the rest. And it touched his heart so much that he came forward and knelt down and gave his heart to the Lord. The dog, after that, then came to church with a new master. And I think, in a little way, it illustrates the importance, the effect that a faithful attendance at the house of God can have. And that's what I want to stress, encourage today. The theme today is attendance records. We sometimes keep them for the boys and girls. At the bright hours, Sunday school prizes are given, and so forth. I want you to think today, in your own heart, of what your attendance record is like at this place, at this church, and the meetings that are held here. The text that we have is a warning against lapsed attendance at God's house, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together. There's a warning here against neglecting the public meetings, neglecting the house of God, neglecting public worship. Remember, brethren and sisters, God's people ought to meet together. I want to emphasize that. Christians ought to come together for fellowship. And these words, they're well known. I pray they'll be a little better known after the meeting today. But these words emphasize and encourage that to our hearts. God's people ought to come together for fellowship. And how timely that exhortation is. Isn't it true that we live in days of great carelessness? There's a sense in which we're in a Laodicean age, lukewarmness in the Christians, in the heart of Christians, in the Christian community generally. We live in a day of great carelessness in the house of God, a great carelessness towards attending public services and public worship. And there's a warning here the sound, and how appropriate it is, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together. Some will ask, and perhaps the question is being asked all the more in the days in which we live, but you might ask today, well, why should I come? Why should I make the effort? Why should I set aside the time to come to the meetings? Well, let me give you some reasons this morning for attending public worship, and I pray the Lord might speak to you and write these things upon your heart. Think first of all of obligation. The reality, brethren and sisters, is you have an obligation as a Christian. You have a duty to come to the meetings. And let me make it clear that that's not an obligation to me as your minister. It's not an obligation to the elders, the session of the church. It's not an obligation to the denomination. And it is good to be faithful and loyal to your church and denomination. If you think primarily that it's any of those things, you're greatly mistaken, and you've your eyes in the wrong place. The reality, men and women, is it is to the Lord himself that you're obligated to attend the meetings of public worship. If you think of the words of that text, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, those words are a command, and it's God's command to his people. Remember that we're soldiers in his army, and every soldier should obey orders. And I want you to ask or think of the question, have you been disobeying this order, this command from your great captain? Remember, the Bible teaches private times with God. You need to get into the closet. You need to have that wee time with the Lord every day. But I want to urge you, men and women, it also teaches public times of worship. That's whenever you meet collectively with other believers. And this is a command to come to public times of worship. In other words, it's God's will that you come to meetings such as the one that you're found in this morning. You don't need to pray about it. You don't need to get up on a Sunday morning and pray and ask the Lord, should I go to church today? This is his will clearly stated in his word. It's not something that you should deliberate upon for a day or two during the week and think, will I go to church this Sunday? Will I go in the morning? Will I go in the evening? I want you to be in no doubt this is the will of God for every Christian. It's so basic, you'd think that we shouldn't even have to mention it. But the sad thing is, it does need emphasizing. It does need underlining more than ever in the day in which we live. The reality is, if you stay at home whenever the saints assemble, you have to acknowledge that you're out of the will of God. And Christians do stay at home. They stay at home for family times. In other words, to meet with relatives and loved ones. That's a common thing on the mainland. Can I say to you, you ought to have family worship. In the days of Elijah, it said that the altar of the Lord was broken down. And that's one altar that's broken down all across our land, the family altar. You ought to have public worship, or family worship rather. But family worship shouldn't take the place of public worship. If you get lazy, sometimes family worship takes the place of your private devotions. You don't have your quiet time. You just have the time with the family and make that do and cover everything. That ought not to be so. And sometimes when Christians get lazy, family worship takes the place of public worship. Can I say to you, if there's no church near to where you are, and some Christians maybe in some countries find themselves in that position, no church near to where you are, then you could stay at home and meet with your family and a few other Christians. But if there's a church in your locality, you ought to be there. When the doors open, you ought to be present. Sometimes people stay at home from church because of faults that they found in the church or in some Christians. Say, I don't agree with this or I don't agree with that. Can I say to you this morning, sound a warning? No matter where you go in this world, you will never find a perfect church. The church is made up of imperfect people. So there will always be faults. There will always be problems and difficulties. If you stay in any church long enough, sooner or later you will disagree with something that is said or something that is done. But that, men and women, is no excuse for staying at home. You have a duty. You have a responsibility to God, to the Lord, to be there in his house and to be found among his people. I want to mention as well, not just obligation, I want you to think about the importance of consideration. If you look at verse 24, let us consider one another to provoke on to love and to good works. As Christians, we ought to consider each other. We ought to consider one another's feelings. We ought to consider one another's condition, circumstances. We ought to consider the thoughts of one another. You are to have a consideration for other believers, for their life and for their walk with God. Consideration. You know, one of the great curses of the day, the society in which we live, is what can be called meism. The only person that matters is me. Taking up with self. You don't care how others are affected. You'll say and you will do just whatever you want. Is that right? People are so selfish, self-centered in the day in which we live. It's a wee bit like the day of the judges. Every man doing that which is right in his own eyes. And that's even found among God's people. It's prevalent even in church life today. But that's not how we're to live as God's people. It's certainly not what the Bible teaches. The Bible teaches a consideration, the one for the other. Think of where it's found in other places. We've emphasized it here in verse 24, but it's taught in other places in the New Testament too. Seek not your own, but every man another's wealth. Many people do you know that lives like that? Not seeking your own wealth, but seeking the wealth, the blessing, the prosperity of others. Do you remember what we considered, those of you who were here a few Sabbath nights ago, when we looked at that question of should a Christian drink alcohol? We dealt with the theme that was found in the New Testament of weaker brethren. And that comes into this matter too. There are others that are not as strong as you are, even spiritually. We're to have a consideration for our weaker brethren and sisters. You ask me today, how can I display that consideration? Well, one way is taught here, by faithfully coming along to the meetings, to the house of God. I want you to think this morning. I want you to think, if you don't come to the services faithfully, you think of the effect that that will have upon others, others in the church, other Christians, others even in your family. Doesn't it set a bad example? Doesn't it discourage them from coming to the meeting? Somebody will look around and say, well, I was out on Sunday and so-and-so wasn't there. Well, if they don't need to go, then I don't need to go. We're to consider others, the effect that our life, our example, will have upon them. If you don't attend, then others will begin to think that it's not important to be at those meetings. It's not important to be along at those services. I want you to see, brethren and sisters, non-attendance, a bad attendance record, it has an effect upon other Christians. And if we have a consideration for others, we'll set them a good example. If we're not just thinking of ourselves, if we're thinking of other Christians and helping and encouraging other Christians, then we will attend the services as faithfully as we can. And you think particularly today of your own family. If you consider your family, and if you're concerned about their spiritual well-being, One of the first things that you'll do is be at the meetings. Be at all of the meetings. Even if they don't come themselves, you'll be there. And by being there, by the example that you set, you'll teach them and you will show to them that they should be there. That that's the place where they ought to be. If you look there in that 24th verse, the word provoke is used. Let us consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works. The idea in the word provoke is stirring people up. We generally think of provoking negatively. In other words, stirring people up to sin or to do something that is wrong. Think of what Paul said writing to the Ephesians. As fathers, we're not to provoke our children to wrath. That's generally the way we think of the word provoke, a negative influence upon others. But it also has a positive meaning. You can provoke someone and have a positive influence upon them. You can provoke people to do good. You can provoke other Christians to go on. And that's what's being taught there, to provoke on to love and to good works. What you've been taught is that by your example, by thinking about other people and living with them in view, with them in mind, you can stir those other people up. You think of that. You think of the fact that your life, your faithfulness in coming to the meetings, that could stir other people up. That could provoke them to be better attenders at the house of God in days to come. So there's consideration. I want you to see as well that there's the matter of exhortation. Why should we come? Why should we not neglect the meetings? Obligation, consideration. Think of exhortation. It's there in the end of that 25th verse. But exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. I want you to think of this question for a moment. What should you do whenever you come to church? Of course, there's many answers. There's several answers we could give to that. Some people think when they come to church, it's just a case of sitting and waiting on the end of the service so that I can get away, and that you hope and pray the end of the service will come quickly. What should you do when you come to church? Well, here's one answer in verse 25. You're to exhort others. And you ought to come with that in mind, with that outlook. Come with that attitude that you want to be an encourager of the Christians. You want to encourage other believers on in the things of God. Remember Barnabas. Doesn't he stand out as the great encourager of the Scriptures, the great encourager of the New Testament church? And we ought to be the same. I want to encourage more Barnabases to be found, to be raised up in this church. Encourage others. It is said of Sir Walter Scott, when he was just a lad, he became one of Scotland's greatest writers, of course, but when he was just a lad, he didn't do so well at school. He often found himself standing in the corner. They would put a paper hat, a pointed paper hat, on the person that they would call the dunce of the class. And that's often where he found himself. And because of that, he hadn't really much motivation to study. But one day, he happened to be found in a place where the great Robbie Burns was being entertained. And there was a picture on the wall, a picture of an author, and at the bottom of the picture there was some stanzas, some verses the author had written. And Robbie Burns was very interested in them. He read them and looked at the picture and inquired of all that were gathered who it actually was and what this poem was all about. And nobody could answer, only the lad, Walter Scott. He told them the details he wanted, and he actually quoted to him the rest of the poem. And Robbie Burns gave him a little pat on the head, and he said, "Laddie, you'll be a great man in Scotland one day." And he said that word of encouragement from a man like Robbie Burns. It made all the difference to him as a young man, as a teenager growing up. The effect the influence of a simple word of encouragement. And I want you to be an encourager, brethren and sisters. We come to church to be encouraged, and that is right and proper, and that is good. But I want you to think of going a step further. Come to church to encourage, to be an encourager of others. Encourage the people around you. Encourage the people you sit beside. Encourage the people in your Sunday school class, the young people of the church. Encourage the families of the congregation, those with little children. Encourage the visitors, those that come into the meetings for the first time. Here's a task. Here's something practical for every Christian to do to help the ministry and the well-being of this work. Can I ask you, brethren and sisters, to say something encouraging to somebody today after the meetings, before you go home? What a difference that might make. Some people might die of shock, of course, if you said something nice to them. You might find it a wee bit hard. It doesn't take very much, just a word or two. Do you remember what Moses said? He was giving his final address to the children of Israel. He was talking about young Joshua, the man that was going to take over the momentous task of leading the people of God. And he said to the people just these two words, encourage him. He saw the importance of encouragement, especially those in leadership positions. And I ask you to take those words upon your heart today. Encourage. Encourage him or her. Someone maybe the Lord has laid upon your heart. And you see the words, not and so much the more as you see the day approaching. That's the day of Christ's return, of course. In other words, what Paul is teaching these Hebrew Christians is the nearer the return of Christ gets, we will need to come to church more. Isn't it sad that there's a decline in church attendance in these end time days in which we live? But he's saying the nearer Christ's return comes, we ought to come and be more faithful in getting out to the meetings. Because the fact is, Christians will need more encouragement in these last days, when there's great influence been brought to bear against the testimony of the gospel and against living the Christian life. We will need more encouragement to live for the Lord than ever. There is a belief, even in church circles, that things will get better as the end of the age approaches. But that is not so. The Bible clearly states evil men and seducers will wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. Remember that before the Lord comes back, there's going to be a falling away. There's going to be a great end time apostasy. That day shall not come, Paul said, except there be first a falling away, and the man of sin shall be revealed. Things will get much worse. And our text infers that so much the more as you see the day approaching. Why does he say that? Why does he say so much the more? Because he realizes the darkness, the wickedness of those end time days. And as the days darken, brethren and sisters, faithful attendance, that ministry of encouragement, of encouraging others, will be more important than ever. Here's another very important reason why you should come faithfully. There's others in the church that need to be encouraged, and you're the one, you're the instrument the Lord wants to use in that encouragement. There's one other thing why you should come. That's manifestation. And it's inferred. Remember when we assemble as believers that Christ is here. It's not a sobering thought. If there's one thing that knowledge should do, it should instill reverence. Reverence in our hearts. Reverence for where we are. Reverence for whose house this is. Reverence for whose word we're listening to. Reverence for whose presence we are gathered here in. Where two or three are met together in my name, there am I in the midst. When Christians assemble as we have done today, the Lord has pledged He'll be there. He'll manifest Himself in the midst of that band of believers. And we come, or you ought to, it ought to be the case. We come in order to meet with Him and to fellowship with Him above all else. We sometimes talk about special meetings. I've said through this anniversary year we're going to have special meetings. But you know, the fact is, men and women, every meeting is special. And the thing that makes every church meeting special is the Lord is here. Christ is among us. And I ask you today, what could be more special for any believer than that? To be in a place where the Lord is. Isn't that heaven begun below? Why should you come? Why should you be here? You should come in order to meet with the Savior. I ask you, whenever the Lord meets here, remember He's here before any one of us ever gets here. Will you disappoint Him? Will He be waiting for you, waiting for your presence, and yet you never turn up? You think of those who were absent, those that missed the meeting, and as a result of that, they missed the blessing. Thomas, the Lord came on that resurrection day, and Thomas wasn't there. I'm sure of this, men and women. I'm sure that Thomas regretted that for the rest of his days, for the rest of his life, that he couldn't say, that he couldn't tell the story, that he was there when the Lord came, when the Lord visited, when the Lord was present on that great resurrection day. Would you want to regret being absent when the Lord came among His people in a blessed and in a special way? You think as well of Acts 12. It says, or Peter said at the end of that evening, go show these things unto James and the brethren. It's not a sad thing. I think that's one of the saddest statements that's found in all the New Testament. Who was James and the brethren? They were the leaders of the New Testament church. And you know what that actually tells us? That Peter had to send some of the Christians to tell them what had happened. They weren't there. The leaders were absent from the prayer meeting that was held in the home of John Mark. His mother, remember, it was in her house, her home. The prayer meeting was held in Acts chapter 12. Do you not think that Peter would have been greatly disappointed, greatly discouraged, when he got released from prison in such a miraculous way in answer to their prayers, and he came to that home only to find the most prominent members of the church were not there? The leaders weren't on their knees praying for his release. They didn't come to pray that God might intervene for him. They were absent, and they missed the answer to prayer. They were absent, and they missed the Lord displaying His great power. Is that not a challenge to our hearts, men and women? Why come? Come to meet with a Savior, to be there when He comes, to be there when He reveals His arm, and when He pours out His blessing. I want you to think of the word forsake that's there in the verse. Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together. Not an interesting word. Remember this as you're met here, whatever your circumstances today. Remember that He will never leave you. And He will never forsake you. What a promise that is. Found a little further over in the 13th chapter of this book of Hebrews. That promise is a great comfort. No matter who else forsakes you. And sometimes the dearest in this world, those that are nearest, those that you expect the most from, they're the ones that do forsake you. But He never will. No matter what you come through, no matter what is said about you, no matter what you face, He has pledged, I'll never leave you, and I'll never forsake you. But you think of this, will you forsake Him? It's not an interesting thought. Will you forsake His house? Will you forsake the meetings? Will you forsake the fellowship of the people of God? We're not to neglect, he said, or we're not to forsake the assembly of ourselves together. So why come? Obligation, consideration, exhortation, and manifestation of the presence of the Savior. I'll finish just with this thought this morning. On the night the Titanic sank, there were five warnings that were sent to that great vessel by wireless. Five very clear warnings sent about the ice field and the icebergs that lay in the path of the Titanic as she made her way to New York City. Whenever the sixth message came across the wireless, this is the reply. This is the wording of the reply that was sent back. Shut up. I'm too busy. It's not fearful. It's a display, or it's a revelation of the arrogance of some of the crew members on the ship that night. That whole idea, that whole mentality, this ship can never sink. We're not in danger. There's nothing that is of any difficulty or any problem to us. Shut up. I'm too busy. 35 minutes after that sixth message was sent, 35 minutes later, the Titanic was sinking. You know, today I've sounded a warning to you not to forsake the assembling of ourselves together. The response of some might be, shut up. I'm too busy. I'm too busy for the meetings. I'm too busy to get involved. I'm too busy to do anything. Too busy for the service of the Master. You might say the same as that radio operator said that night. You might say the same when all appeals are made. All appeals are made in the church for help when there's special meetings that are being arranged for the extension of God's work. Well, the result, men and women, if that is your response, you will sink. Your life will sink. Your life will sink into barrenness. And your life will sink into uselessness. Remember that one of the great benefits of coming out is being encouraged, the fellowship, the help, the support of God's people. If you neglect and forsake all of those things, your life will sink into barrenness, into uselessness. And that, men and women, is a greater tragedy. A greater tragedy by far, even than the sinking of the great Titanic. Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as ye see the day approaching. 600.